Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, Great Fail listeners. This is Deborah Chen, host of The Great Fail. We're going to be on a short break for the next 2 weeks, but in the meantime, we wanted to give you a little something to hold you over. This week, we're dropping you Homework, a new marketing podcast that's not about marketing. Hosted by AMA Marketing Hall of Fame inductee Antonio Lucio, Homework is about the real talk on the good, bad, ugly, and extraordinary of balancing life and work. They'll bring true role models of the industry together along with their partners to discuss how they do it. On the premiere episode of Homework, Antonio sits down with Carla Hassan, Chief Marketing Officer of JPMorgan Chase, and Tariq Hassan, Chief Marketing and Digital Customer Experience Officer of McDonald's, to discuss balancing two incredible careers while raising a family, what they learned while raising a family during the pandemic, and why they don't consider themselves a power couple. Subscribe to Homework on your favorite podcast platform or by visiting adweek.com/podcasts. We'll see you in 2 weeks for our regularly scheduled episode drops. Feel free to send us a note, comment, or feedback. We'd love to hear from you. And remember, folks, with great failure comes great liability.
Hello, and welcome to Homework, the first marketing podcast that it's not about marketing. In Homework, we're going to be exploring the good, the bad, the ugly, and the extraordinary of the task of integrating our work life with our real life. We're going to be sharing best practices and some mistakes by some of our biggest leaders in the industry. Today, we have Tariq and Carla Hassan. I've known them both for over 20 years. Each one of them has a very big job. Carla is currently the Chief Marketing Officer of Chase, and Tariq is the Chief Marketing Officer of McDonald's in the US. They have a beautiful teenage daughter, Noor, and today we're going to talk about how do they integrate work and life. Well, hello everyone. I'm super happy today because I have my very good friends, Carla and Tariq Hassan. I have known these two for over 20 years. Carla was starting her marketing career at PepsiCo, and Tariq was probably one of the best planners I ever had working in my account when I was also starting my international career. They've been a couple now for several years, and I cannot wait to have this conversation with them. So welcome, Carla and Tariq.
Hi, how are you?
Great to see you, Antonio.
Great to see you guys. So why don't we start at the very beginning? How did you guys meet?
Well, why don't you tell the story?
No, you go ahead.
Well, okay. Well, tell me if I'm wrong. Like, give me a sign. So we were both living in Chicago, and I had been working for Kellogg's. But when I was living in Michigan, I knew this guy, Scott, who was a good friend of mine while I was working there. And he had left Kellogg's and went to work on Gatorade. And we had stayed in touch, you know, here and there. And out of the blue one day, he said to me, "Hey, there's just this nice Lebanese guy. And I don't know if you're into Lebanese guys, but, you know, he lives here in Chicago and, you know, maybe you can meet him." And so that my side of the story is that's how it went. And so Tariq got a hold of me and we had my first and ever last blind date, actually. And then, as they say, the rest is history. But it was through our friend Scott from Michigan who introduced us. You have anything else to add?
No, I had Scott had become a client when I was leading a strategy for Gatorade. And I walked into some focus groups one day and he and the head of the account team apparently had been conniving behind my back and decided it was time for me to date. And so they said, hey, we know this really great Lebanese woman. We're going to introduce you. They gave me less choice than they gave Carla.
So Carla, what attracted you from Tariq?
You know, I feel like he's, well, you know, if anyone who knows Tariq knows how charming he is. So he was super charming, even from his emails that he sent. So that was one. And then when I met him, I will say the first thing I noticed was his smile, actually. He just was.
That's not true. The first thing you noticed was how short I was.
Why are you outing yourself? True. My brothers are very tall and Tariq is not as tall as my brother. So I did notice that, but your smile was really nice. It was like super genuine. So he's very charismatic and as you know, and he draws you into any kind of conversation and his smile. Yeah. Both those things.
What about you, Tariq? What attracted you from Carla?
Well, again, you know, we're going to sound like we're repeating each other, but you know, Carla's a great blend of intelligence and personal energy. Great smile, great laugh, able to move back and forth between, you know, different subjects from the nonsense to the, you know, really important. And I think our first time out was proof of that. It was a very long blind date, considering I wasn't even sure I wanted to go. That was a pretty good night.
That's great. So how long have you guys been together now? Quite a while, huh?
Yeah, quite a while.
20 years.
Yeah, 20 years. Year. 20 years. We met it was April 6, 2002
wow.
when we met. That was our first date. Yeah. So it's been 20 years. And then we've been married for 18 of those 20.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
And you guys have had, both of you individually amazing careers. You have some of the biggest jobs in the US today. Carla, you're the chief marketing officer of JPMorgan Chase, and Tariq, you're the chief marketing officer of McDonald's USA, the biggest division of the company. You would be described by many people as a power couple, but I understand that you guys hate that term. Can you share with us what that means?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say I hate it. I think as much as we reject it. I think there is a place where it's appropriate. And I think we reject it because power couple insinuates that the work we do together. And while there were points in the past where I was agency and she was client, we think it kind of diminishes who we are as individuals and the work that we do as individuals. And the reality is that the success that Carla has had has zero to do with the fact that I also happen to be a CMO. And so I think we reject it because I also think I find it's hard enough to maintain your eye, you know, as a couple and as a professional, your individualism and your identity, that to sort of lump it together, I think kind of diminishes, frankly, her accomplishments or the things that we've achieved individually.
Yeah, you know, interestingly enough, I totally agree. I would have one caveat to that, Antonio, which would be that I think recently we've realized that, you know what, together we are what people outside of us consider a power couple. And so while we reject it because we want to maintain, to Tariq's point, like our eyes, we also recognize that together we could have and should have some impact. And we're still trying to figure out what that is, right, together. It's a battle all the time because Tariq's 100% right. We've rejected it for so long, but there is something about that. And we've got to ask ourselves, what responsibility do we have as two people who are, by any stretch of any imagination, would say are powerful roles. And so we want to use that for good together. And then I think the couple thing feels stronger.
Yeah, super, super, super thoughtful. It's interesting. The two of you got really big jobs kind of at the same time in the middle of the pandemic. and you have a wonderful teenage daughter. How do you make it all work? Pandemic, new jobs, parents, New York City. How does it work?
Yeah. Look, some days it doesn't work. So we'll start there because, and it does work for the most part, but some days it doesn't work. I feel like so many people see on any of our social media handles or when we sit in a party and we're, you know, talking to friends, they see the, you know, the good part, the fun part, the stuff that does work, which I'll talk about in a second because it does require a level of discipline. But there a lot of times it doesn't work. A lot of times it's messy. A lot of times someone will drop the ball and someone else will get mad at someone else. And I thought you paid that bill, or I thought you did this, or, oh my gosh, who's taking the kid to blah, 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 you know? And so a lot of times it doesn't work. But I would tell you the way that when it works, which is most of the time, we are extremely disciplined. So we have a Team Hassan calendar. It is very clear who is where, when they are there, you know, what they are doing, who's going to be with Noor. We divide and conquer a lot. There's no ego about, you know, whose job is more important. We flex. You know, there are some times when he just has something that is so critical for his job that I make the decision, I'm going to stay home, for example, and vice versa. He'll know that there's a trip that's coming that is really, really important for me, and we need Noor to, you know, have coverage, and so he'll be here. And so I would say a lot of discipline. And the other thing I would say is it takes an army. We have support all around us, and not just, you know, support from, you know, people who have worked for us and been in our lives for a long time, but friends who have become family, who, you know, sometimes we lean on and say, can you keep Noor for us for a day, or can you watch out for her, you know, because we've given, you know, she has your number. She's going to call you because we're not here. So it's a tremendous amount of discipline, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I'd also just say it's muscle memory. We've been doing it for a long time. You know, you talk about the scale of our roles, but the reality is both of our roles, even as we were starting careers, had international components to it, had travel components to it. You know, parts of the members of our family, grandparents were a little bit younger back then, so it was also easy to have them lean in. And I also think that rather than viewing it as a negative, I don't think we've ever viewed it as anything but a positive for Noor's independence and development by having her around other influences of people, whether that's, you know, phenomenal members of our family, nannies who became members of our family, or grandparents, where she spent inordinate amount of times with family. And I think we didn't spend a lot of time overthinking parent guilt. It's not to suggest there aren't moments where we, you know, where we're disappointed we can't be at something, but I don't think that we viewed it as something we dwell on. I think we pivoted the opposite and created those as an understanding for Noor to understand what we do and identify. I think someone, I can't remember who told us this once, but it's not how many things you go to, but it's the things you pick and you make sure you go to, and the sort of the way you impress it on your kid, the importance of things. And then I would just tell you, FaceTime is a blessing, it's good, right? When you can't be there. So while Zoom, I'm over Zoom when it comes to business, when I was doing, you know, 3 years of my past life back and forth between San Diego and New York for my Petco role, you know, sometimes quick FaceTime filled the gaps, or sometimes FaceTime to watch a volleyball game. That's not perfect, but it sends the intent. So I think it's a combination of, by the way, the discipline and that whole calendar thing Carla talking about, anyone who knows me will tell you, you know, that's Carla's creation.
Yes, I know.
And have near that kind of discipline.
It is. And I always say to him, Antonio, I'm like, hey, did you put it on the calendar? Is it on the calendar? Because if it's not on the calendar, it's not happening. And he's like, can you please just please?
Antonio, I don't even know where the calendar is.
I end up putting it on the calendar. You know, the one thing that Tariq said, though, that strikes me as interesting is, particularly as it relates to the decisions that we've made around what we attend and don't attend with Noor, you know our history with Noor. And I would say that, you know, we have come to a place where we are unapologetic about when it's important to her, we make the decision. Like we make her the number one. It's not all the time, but it's because of the trauma that we went through with her. And sadly, sometimes I think you have to go through those things in your life to be able to say, here's what's important. So it actually, interestingly enough, outside of our discipline, our experience with her has become a mechanism for us to say what is important to attend as parents. And that's why the parent guilt kind of goes away, because we know what's important to her. And it doesn't matter what I'm doing or what he's doing. If it is of that much importance to her, we will be there. And so those kinds of decisions become a little bit easier for us because of what we've gone through with her.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot of the conversations that we're having about work-life balance reflect some of the concepts that you're sharing. And I've known you guys for a long time. You're incredibly outstanding in jobs, and I've seen you in your roles as parents as well. How do you make time, me time, Carla individual time, Tarek individual time, and importantly, couple time?
Ooh, that is a very, very good question. I will tell you that for anyone that has a partner or a spouse, it is extremely important that that person respects the time you need. I promise that, like, I never would be able to have the kind of stability in my mental health that I do if it wasn't for Tarek. Like, he knows the moments that I need my time. And it is from when Noor was a tiny little thing, he would say, like, on a Sunday, hey, I'm going to take her for a couple of hours. I'm just going to go walk. Or why don't you go walk? Like, I got her, or something. Like, it just, it's so important for the partner that you have to know when you need that time. I think it's also really important for you to be able to voice that you need that time. And I have no issue saying to Tarek, like, I just need a minute. And I need you to know that it's not about you. It's actually about me. And whether that minute is, you know, sitting in my room reading a book, whether that minute is walking outside, whether it's talking to a family member without Noor or Tarek, like, whatever it is, I feel like you have to be able to voice that to your partner, and your partner has to be willing to accept that it's not about them in that moment. It's about you. Otherwise, it's really hard, because then you never have the time for yourself, particularly when you have a child and a dog. I don't know if you have any other.
No, I would actually argue, Antonio, that, like, none of us actually, there's a reason they talk about empty nesters, right? No one really gets the kind of time that they need until the space is there. And then what do they wish? They wish they had less of it, right? I think there's a flip side to it too. It's about, what do you do in absence of that for yourself, right? This notion of, I've never been a big fan of the notion of work-life balance, not because I don't think it's something we should be thoughtful of, I do, but I think it's a bit of a misnomer, because even if you remove work, most people's lives still have challenges that they figure out what they have to balance anyways. And so I think it's, what do you do during those moments when you're not in balance? What do you do, and how do you communicate the challenges around that? Because honestly, there are times when your life may look completely out of imbalance to somebody else, and it feels perfectly on spot for you, right? And so part of that is a reference point for yourself, not for others. And you talk about time away. I think it just depends on, you know, time to yourself. I think it depends on the individual too. For me, when I need to recharge, the last thing I want is time to myself. I want to be around lots of people. I get my energy from people. Carla's the opposite, right? She wants to clear the house and have it to herself. And so I think it's also understanding and decoding what are those elements of being able to self-preserve and recharge for yourself, and understand that those can look different.
Well, and it's your partner understanding what those are for you, right? So, you know, Antonia, you talk a lot about empathy, right? And empathy is not just being nice. It's about knowing, you know, putting yourself in somebody else's shoes and knowing what they need and then giving them the space for that. And I think, and that's, I think, Tariq, what you're talking about is like, he knows that on a Friday night, I get my energy from, you know, sitting on the couch, curling up by myself. I know that on a Friday night, he wants to go out. And so we've got to figure out that flex. It's very, very different for each of us. And we and it's a compromise, because if it's good for one person all the time, it, that by default, that means it's not good for the other person, right? And when you are in a relationship, it is a give and take. And so there is a, you know, it's just knowing who you're with, and knowing what they need, and being able to, you know, give them that while not losing yourself, frankly.
And is date time also included in the schedule?
I mean, if we're authentic about it, I think we, I don't know that we live our life around that sort of, like, we find social time together. Period. It's who we are. I don't know that we, it's not on there any more than sandwich night is on the calendar. Like, it's just,
if I could, it would be, Antonio.
I love it.
That just shows you the difference between the two of us.
Yeah. Until she got home and said she didn't feel like going out anymore, Antonio.
I totally get it and can relate as well.
Yeah.
Guys, what did you guys learn as a family during the pandemic in terms of things that you want to keep now that we're coming out of it?
I have an answer.
Go for it, yeah.
I learned that we like each other. And you know, to me, that's really important, because, you know, being with somebody for that long, it's very easy for routines to take over, and for people to just kind of, I'm just going to sound very strange, but for people to just become roommates, you know, like you pay bills together, you do errands, you this, you that, you know, it's very easy. And then, you know, and Tariq had been, you know, pretty much traveling all the time for 3 years. And then all of a sudden we were all in the same place again. And you worry, like, what's that going to feel like? And I learned that we actually like each other. We don't just love each other, we like each other. And that, I think, is really important, because that means that I want to spend time with him. And frankly, not just him, our daughter as well. Like, we have fun together, and we have tried to not take that away. It's become harder, really, really hard, but we've really tried hard to maintain a sense of, like, it's fun, and trying to keep it fun, and trying to keep life light together. And so there is a, as you know, there's a lot of laughter in our house. There's also a lot of debate, but there's a lot of laughter in our house, because we actually like each other. And I think that that might sound surprising to some people that I choose to use that word, but I do think that for me, I reflected on, like, wow, we're like a good little family here. It's fun. It's fun to be a part of this family, and I don't want to lose that.
I think both of us would acknowledge that we are glad the doors are open again and that we can like each other outside of four walls.
Maybe even better outside of four walls. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. There are lots of weekends I'm told to go back to Chicago.
Oh my gosh.
Or that the only one that's happy when I get home is the dog. Who is also the only other male in the house?
Well, so. I can relate to that. I don't even have a dog, Tariq. But it's very interesting what you're saying. I found the same thing, that when you're faced to be in close quarters with your significant other and your family, you know, if it works, it's wonderful. If it doesn't, is disaster. And we have all read the numbers, the number of people that have changed jobs, changed cities, and also changed their marital status during the pandemic and post-pandemic is just staggering. So it is actually a blessing when you find that you, like, I love the way that you expressed it, Carla, that we all love each other, but we like each other. We actually like to spend time with each other. What do you guys think?
And you know, sorry, Antonio, just one thing on that. What I think was really, really interesting, it also, you know, as it relates to work, it also then, because other things become important or have become important during that time, it also resets a little bit what is important and not important, even as it relates to the industry that we're in, at least for me, right? That moment really kind of, or the 2 years that we went through, really not just, you know, reaffirmed the piece that I just said, but also it kind of made me think differently about even like where I want to be and who I want to be even in our industry. So I think there's so many things that came out of the and how I want to behave, right, in our industry. And so there's so many things that came out of that pandemic that I think we want to keep.
So let's take that. I mean, you guys are in position of significant impact and influence. What are the things that corporations should do in order to ensure that the different families actually are able to live within the work-life integration that they individually need? What can companies do?
You know, it's interesting. This answer may not be that popular with some people, because I think there's a general perception in a lot of pockets of our industry that we made this all work completely virtual. Why can't we maintain either that complete virtuality or significant flexibility? I do think that industry and companies need an accountability to think through how they provide that flexibility to support their employees. And I think we learned a lot of those pieces. And I think we learned that because we're allowing our employees to live a more authentic life by doing that. We're allowing ourselves to live a more authentic life by doing that. Having said that, though, I think it's incumbent upon us as leaders and as partners inside of a company to ensure that we also maintain the authentic identity of a company. And so a company that started virtual pre-pandemic and remained virtual, that was part of their identity. A company that was not, was completely physically present. This was a massive swing of a cultural identity for a company. And while I think companies need to evolve their culture and think them through, I think we as partners also need to understand what that needs to look like and how we participate in it. So, you know, personally, I'm not a fan of the suggestion of it worked the way we were, so let's just keep it going. I think we all have to step back, look at the company, what made the company successful, what parts of the culture made the company successful, what are those that we can maintain while also continuing to learn from the benefits we gained, the flexibility that was discovered during COVID. But I do think we're at an inflection point. I'm hearing a lot of companies talk about, okay, we seem to have moved past the major issues. How do you give the right flexibility to those who have physical and health needs? But how do we also think about how to maintain our identity as a company and recapture some of those elements that were working for us prior? And I think we're at a really interesting point for that. And so what I've asked my teams to think about is not only what the company does for us, but also think about how do we play a role in maintaining those elements of the company identity. And I don't think it's something we talk quite enough about in the role that we play in our shared support in the culture of that identity of the company.
You know, it's interesting for me. I think there's some things about that, of what you just said, that I definitely agree with. And there's places where I diverge. I mean, I think that I agree that we are humans, and human nature is to be around other humans. So, you know, in general. And so I have found that when my teams do come in, they actually love interacting with others and they remember the culture of the company and they remember like what they love about it. And it just gives them energy. And so that part I agree with, because you're right. I think it's much easier for you to, you know, not be connected to a company culture if the only thing you have is, you know, little boxes on a screen. Having said that, I do think that companies really need to, and a lot are starting to, think much more about flexibility for people. I don't think, you know, again, 5 days a week off or whatever, if before the pandemic, it wasn't 5 days a week at home or whatever. But I do think that particularly, you know, single parents who struggle, people who have like massive commutes, like all of those things, if, you know, if we can provide flexibility to people to be able to continue to do their job but to do it in a way where they don't have to come in 5 days a week. And I know that's not what you're saying, but to relieve the pressure of them to have to come in every single day and to give them a little bit more flexibility. I think that is probably, you know, the future. But I where I do agree with you is I think if the, and we have this debate all the time, if the job before the pandemic was 5 days a week in the office and now it's 3 days a week in the office, that should be perceived as a good thing and as flexible versus not. And I just think we're in that time. You're right that we're in that time. We're in a moment in time, but I do think that flexibility helps those that need it the most. And I feel like we need to also as leaders be, you know, open to those exceptions so that people can have jobs and people can continue to work.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're saying much of the same thing. And Tony, what I'm actually poking at is lost in the number of days in the week is the role that we all play in the cultures that we participate in. And that culture impacts us as individuals. And my point is, how do we as partners in those organizations reinvest in the cultural identity of the company that we were part of before the pandemic? We asked the companies to do a lot to reinvest in our identities, in our lives, in our work life. I'm simply suggesting that if we all step back and objectively think about what is that culture of the company that was successful before, what are the elements that we love about it, that it might require us as individuals to reinvest in that culture and identity, because it's only possible through the collection of the partners. It can't fix itself as a company. We're the members of that company that do that.
I think Mark Andreessen just I think this week made some very interesting observations saying that this shift, this hybrid, whatever we want to call it, it will be more significant in terms of societal impact in the way that we live and in the way that the populations are going to be distributed, bigger than the internet. And he was saying that 100 years from now, we will look at this time as one of those tectonic shifts that actually changed the way in which we were approaching life. The interesting thing is no one has all the answers. Everyone is experimenting, and we will collectively, hopefully, get smarter about this so that we can continue to do everything that we need to do, live meaningful lives and meaningful and productive lives, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely.
My last question that I ask everybody is, if we could go back to the dreams of your younger self in your early 20s as to what life was going to be like relative to the life that you have been able to live until now, where are you?
Go ahead.
No, you can go ahead.
Someone asked me the other day what the title of my autobiography would be. And I was like, well, I'm not done yet, so I don't know what that would be. But if you told me right now to, you know, give you a title, it would be something to the effect of an unlikely success story or something like that. Because I grew up by all intents and purposes in a privileged life overseas. But then we moved to the U.S. and life was very different. My parents believed in education, but they didn't know anybody in the U.S. They didn't know anyone that they could introduce me to, that they could network me to. I ended up in Battle Creek, Michigan. I lived in Kalamazoo, Michigan. I didn't even know how to pronounce it when I first, you know, moved there. And then I moved around and then here I am, like I'm this kid from Lebanon who grew up in Dubai and moved to the U.S. and now I'm the CMO of J.P. Morgan Chase, and I have a beautiful 15-year-old daughter and an incredibly supportive husband, and I just never imagined that I would be here. And so for me, I thought I would, you know, go to school, I would go back to the Middle East, I would live a life like everyone else I know there. I just never thought that I'd be here. And so I'm incredibly proud of that. It has been many, many twists and turns, as you know, Antonio. You know, again, we end up here in these, you know, beautiful, glorious, to the rest of the world, places. But it is not without its very, very, very high ups and very, very, very low downs. And those moments are extremely lonely. By the way, both of those, the ups and the downs, you learn who your friends are. You learn who, you know, who really cares deeply about you. But I would say unlikely if you know where I went to university versus where everyone around me went to university, just everything about it. I did not at all envision that I would be here right now. And so I'm very grateful and I'm very, very humbled to be where I am today.
I guess I paused on it, Antonio, because I've never been really one to look over my shoulder. Of course, I've learned from things and bring those things forward. But even when it comes to New Year's, I'm not a big reflection at that point in time. I think that we should learn point in time as we go. And so I guess, if anything, I'd look back and you know, if I'll stick with Carla's autobiography title, I guess I'd probably call it The Mistakes I Made and the Ones I Wish I Had Made. because I think that's, you know, I think I might talk to my team a lot about the fact that, you know, you never achieve greatness with fear of failure. And I'm somebody who has always approached things in a way where chase the stretch opportunity, pursue elements in your life that people are telling you are not possible. I think part of it comes from growing up dyslexic and being told what you can't do and kind of rejecting the notion of that, and growing up brown and growing up Muslim and the things that come with perceive people's perceptions. But I can honestly say that I don't look over my shoulder and look at a fork in a road and say, wow, I thought I would have been here versus there. I think it's probably because I had my head so high in the clouds that I actually didn't know where there would be, but I knew I wanted it to be something that I enjoyed, that would be big, that would impact my life, could potentially impact a community. And really, I think the thing that stayed hard for me was, you know, that would fulfill my grandparents' dreams, right? Of immigrants who sought out to create a better life. My parents took their first next step and had a, you know, tremendously successful by all means in terms of their boys have gone on to do even better things. And so I guess I have a pretty simple view of what my life could look like. And I would just tell you it way exceeds what that view would have been.
Well, we share that. And I think we also share the title of our biographies, whoever is going to write them, because I'm not going to write mine. Anyway, guys, thank you very much for the time. It's always a pleasure to hear your story, to get inspired from, not from what you do, but actually from the amazing people that you both are. I'm very proud of our friendship more than anything. I'm also proud of everything that you guys have been able to accomplish. So thank you very much from the bottom of my heart for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you, my friend.
Have a great day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Homework, part of the Adweek Podcast Network and Acast Creator Network. This podcast was produced by Monica Bernal, executive produced by Al Manarino and John Heil, and edited by Lane McGibney at Batwell Studios. You can listen and subscribe to all of Adweek's podcasts by visiting adweek.com/podcasts. Stay updated on all things Adweek Podcast Network by following us on Twitter at Adweek Podcasts. And if you have a question or suggestion for the show, send us an email at podcast@adweek.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.